How about that?
There you go.
We're getting ready to start. The solution is in the steps. So if you want to find yourself a seat. And Marita is going to kick it off. Here you go. Thank you.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marita, and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Marita.
And I have a cold. But I think that's a good thing, because when I'm sick, my ego has trouble finding the reins. So I'm hoping that my higher power will have an easier time of carrying some sort of message. I was asked to announce, first off, that there's paper and pens up here for those who like to doodle, take notes, whatever. As soon as I walked in the door, the thought occurred to me that food absolutely destroyed my life. And it came near destroying me. Through Overeaters Anonymous and the 12 steps, I feel that I have been miraculously restored to sanity. And it makes absolutely no sense to me, frankly. I mean, why would the 12 steps do for me what all the other things that I tried did not? And the fact that it worked almost like clockwork, right out of the book, is a little freaky to me. And the only way to tell you my journey is I have to break my anonymity and say that I'm also an alcoholic. And I'm one of those people who changes deck chairs. You know, I survived one near-death addiction only to find myself hopping into a different deck chair on a different deck on the same Titanic. And that deck chair was my food addiction. And it came on me a few years into my recovery, and it progressed. And it doesn't matter why it came, and it doesn't matter why I got it when I got it. It's just that I knew enough about addiction to know things like that we say in that other fellowship, like, you know, once you're a pickle, you're never going to be a cucumber again. And so having given up alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes, I was in no hurry to give up sugar, my new deck chair. So I thought it was only sugar at the time. At any rate, I finally got tired of, I got to the point where I was walking around my office, and I worked for a magazine in New York, and everybody looked to me to be very fabulous, and I felt old and fat. And I was walking around in, I have to stand, dress pants like this, and I had them completely unbuttoned, the zipper was growing lower and lower as I was refused to go to the next dress, women's clothing size. So I was walking around my office with all these very sophisticated looking young girls and my sweater pulled down and praying that my zipper wouldn't break. Because, I mean, that'd be a great day in the office in Times Square, right? And it's a very, very, if you want to really give your self-esteem a real shot, try walking around like that for a few years. So it was getting to the point of desperation. I would remember, like, being in Macy's and finding a pair of pants that were labeled 14. They were no 14, but they fit me, and I wore them until they gave out. And somewhere around then, I found my way to the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, and I did not become abstinent. I was in the rooms of OA for a long, long time, doing absolutely nothing. And finally, I surrendered very, very slowly. I heard someone say one time that we throw in the towel when we come in here. I didn't throw in the towel. I did what he said after that. He said, first we throw in the towel, and then in about 90 days we take the towel back, and we spend the rest of our recovery throwing it in, like one thread at a time. And what happened for me was I spent my entire journey in OA in the beginning was about one thread at a time. And it took me approximately 2 years to attempt to stop eating sugar altogether, because I just didn't want to face it. That there was no a little for me. It was all or nothing. I got 90 days off sugar and decided to try the experiment of the first scoop. And that went well that week. And the following week, the first scoop became a little more uncomfortable. And by the next day, I was in a full binge. So that was a very, very valuable lesson. And as it turns out, it's right out of the 12 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it says, you know, try some more controlled eating. Try to eat and stop abruptly. And then the most important phrase for me, try it more than once. So I got away with it that first Saturday night, but the following Saturday, the single scoop barely kept me until Sunday, where I went through things that come on plates, things that come in boxes, oh, many, many things. And I learned that it doesn't matter that it's been 90 days. It doesn't matter for me. It wouldn't matter if it had been 90 years. I know what will happen if I have one scoop. So that was only one more thread, however, because I refused to acknowledge the fact that I had to deal with my issues with portions, because I'll simply just find another chair. You know, and I did. I said, okay, well, no more of that. And I was thinking my plate became, you know. So finally, I found a nutritionist through a woman in the rooms who gave me her food plan. I never wanted a food plan. I really didn't want a food plan. It sounded like diet. I now understand that a food plan, you know, is really a freedom plan if you get a good food plan. If it's not a food plan that's a diet, for me, wouldn't work. And the nutritionist taught me all sorts of stuff, and that's not my job, but I learned that if I have a good food plan, it will sort of fake out my metabolism and allow me to slowly, and I mean, you know, I was in my 40s when I got absent the first time, and I lost, I don't know, not that much my weight gain. I did not have profound weight gain, I just had profound misery. But I lost about, I would say, 15 or 20 pounds over the course of a year. And but it was a solid weight loss, and it was real, and it was healthy, and I felt terrific. And I had amazing energy when I put down, for me, this is, everyone is different. I'm not telling you you have to follow my food plan. Please understand. I have many sponsees, and they all follow a different food plan. My sponsor follows a different food plan. It's not one size fits all, in my opinion, in my experience. But at any rate, I do not eat sugar or flour. And I haven't now in 4 years. But I did not maintain that abstinence. I kept it for about 2 years. And then I decided that, you know, I'm going to these other meetings for the beverage program. Why do I need to keep coming here? Right? So it took about a month, and I was back in everything but the sugar. And I didn't know it. That was really extraordinary. I relapsed in June, I think, or July. And it wasn't until the fall, as I progressed right back up through my clothing sizes, that I realized that I had lost my abstinence. And what happened then was, oh, okay, great, perfect, thank you. I was told, you know, you should get abstinent in 5 minutes. So here I am, I'm getting abstinent the second time. I spent 2 years trying to get abstinent that second time. Again, 2 years, and it was hell. And if anybody's here and has had abstinence, it is an incredible freedom. And if you lose it, it is an incredible bondage. It's worse than not being abstinent at all, to lose it after having had it. And the thing that was most, I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, being unable to get it back and being ever more demoralized and defeated. And I remember the analogy that the image in my mind was, if you imagine that you were laying in the gutter, not the usual gutter analogy, just picture like a little curbstone height, and you see all the people walking, they're only a few inches above your face. That's what the distance, it seemed to me, was between being unabstinent and being abstinent was. It was just those few inches. But I couldn't get back up there. I would make an effort to stand, and I might even get, you know, up on the curb, but the next thing I knew, I was flat out. And I didn't, it was as if someone had wrapped me in some sort of thing that made me unable to think or really control anything. And it seemed like I would just slide right back down there. And I remember being one of the people walking along on the curb, you know, one of the people who had abstinence. And I finally came to realize that I'm not only powerless over food, and certain foods very much so, but I realized I was powerless over my recovery. Because recovery for me the first time kind of felt like I'd done another diet. I kind of felt like I had triumphed over my body and food and whatever, and I took credit for it. And that's what allowed me to say, you know, you guys have fun, I'm going to go back over here, I don't really need to do this, and I do need to do this. So I started going back to meetings. I started going to entire meetings, not coming late and leaving early. I started sponsoring as soon as I got 30 days. And I did get 30 days. That time I got 30 days. I spoke a lot about not taking credit for this abstinence. I still don't take credit for this abstinence. I don't know why I was given it a second time. I know people who've never received it once. I didn't ask him to give it to me again, my higher power. I just said, well, I'll leave it up to you. I'll try to follow all of OA's suggestions this time. I counted days. I did all the things I didn't want to do. And I still do things, whether I want to do them or not. And my loving sponsor often says, you know, we don't really care what you think. And we frankly, we don't even care how you feel. We only care what you do. And that's been really helpful for me because I'm a big thinker and feeler. And I really want to tell you all about my thoughts and feelings. And I don't really want to do anything. So what happened was, as I said, I had to break my anonymity to tell you, and I think this is a pretty strong testament in favor of the step. So now I've got some abstinence, but it was kind of white knuckle. I mean, it was grinding abstinence. I was staying abstinent a day at a time, but it was not easy. It was not the freedom that I experienced the first time. And at this time, I had changed sponsors. I'll say this in case anyone's in two fellowships. I had tried earlier, in my earlier time in the program, I tried all sorts of things. I tried doing the steps with my AA sponsor and my OA sponsor, and I found that never seemed to work for me. What did work for me is I have an OA sponsor, and she is my food sponsor. I do talk to her about other things, but she's primarily my food sponsor. And I have an AA sponsor who is the woman who took me through the 12 steps. During the beginning of this abstinence, I had changed sponsors in AA because my sponsor had dropped me for whatever reason, and I got this new sponsor, and she said she would take me through all 12 steps in order, and she really recommended that, as do I, all 12 steps in order with one person who has had this exact experience. That's what I'm selling, if you will. That's what worked for me. So we started going through the steps, and about a year went by, and as I said, I was but it was by the skin of my teeth some days. I've never noticed this before, but there's a promise in the 10th step. And I think in OA, more so than in the other fellowship, sometimes people can come into AA and stop drinking and then work the steps or not. But in our fellowship, as they say, since we have to take the tiger out of the cage several times a day, it's a little more challenging. And I think that this promise, which is in the 10th step, is particularly important, and I say this to sponsees in both fellowships, that the original purpose was, the original message of the program was not come to OA or whatever, come to whatever A, and stop doing whatever it is that's caused you a problem and brought you here. And now, since you've got all this free time, let's take you through the steps. Let's face it, if we all walked into an OA meeting and got abstinent, we'd walk right back out and not come back. Why would I do this if I didn't need to, right? I really believe that for the majority of the people in this program, it seems like abstinence is the result of the 12 steps, not that there's this pre-step one. And step one is not, I think it's misconstrued a lot, and I misconstrued it. I thought step one was admitted I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable and stopped, and then went on to work the other steps. Thank you. But I don't think that's really what it says. It just says, I admit I'm powerless over food. I admitted I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable long before I came to OA. That's all I need to get myself moving through the steps, is to admit powerlessness. But that doesn't mean I'm going to be abstinent. I admitted powerlessness but didn't get abstinent for many, many years. So, and what the book says and what I believe and what my experience is that you have to work the 12 steps in order to gain and maintain abstinence. And in other words, first I've got to be willing to find God and then let God solve my problem because I can't. And this has been my experience, and I hope you've kind of gleaned at it because I'm kind of rushing along here now. I took inventory, all the inventories, not just partial. I had some sponsors who were very wonderful, well-meaning people who didn't know that there were three inventories, not one. People talked all the time about the resentment inventory, but nobody ever talked about the fear inventory, and nobody ever said the sex word and talked about the sex inventory. And I finally had a sponsor who heard my resentment inventory, my fear inventory, and my sex inventory, and we did 6 and 7 on all three areas of difficulty. Resentments were a problem, but boy, fear and intimacy were huge problems for me. So 6 and 7, and then I did an 8 step list based on those inventories and other things, and I went out and I began to repair the damage. Now this brings me to about a year and a half of abstinence. And as I said, it's white knuckle abstinence. It's the fall. I've begun working the 9th step, and as my sponsor puts it, I'm working 9, chipping away at my amends, and living in 10, 11, and 12. And it just so happened that we had some house guests around Thanksgiving. And I noticed that I was being uncharacteristically easygoing about where we went to dinner. Like instead of saying, no, we can't go to a Thai restaurant, we have to go to blah, 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 whatever. I was saying, all right, I'll find something on the menu. And I thought, oh, I'm so nice when we have company. This is really amazing. I'm behaving much more sanely. And as someone once said, I can be very compulsive about my abstinence, just like I was compulsive about my overeating. So at any rate, all of a sudden, after about a month and a half and the company are gone, I'm thinking, something has shifted in me, like this profound shift. And I go to an OA meeting that's a big book study on Sunday mornings, And it just so happened that we got to step 10. And I never heard, I mean, I've probably read them countless times, but I realized I was experiencing the 10th step promise. Now, bear in mind, not the pre-step 1 promise or the half of step 1 promise, but the 10th step promise. And it goes like this. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So here I am. I'm trying to chip away at 9. I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. Here are the promises. And we have, I'm going to translate it into food. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food, for by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in food. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. Here's the warning. That is how we react so long as we keep in fixed spiritual condition. And then it goes on to talk about what that means. But this is what I realized had happened. I was having the promise of the 10th step had come true. And my attitude toward food had experienced a profound change. And that is where I have lived. And I have 4 years coming up on my anniversary in April. I don't like to ever count numbers that aren't reality, you know, and they're all a gift, provided I'm willing to, you know, give away, you know, continue to mine this endless vein of recovery and give away the entire thing, everything that I find, give it all away. So thank you so much, and I hope I've helped you.
Hi, I'm Jen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jen.
I'm from South Jersey Inner Group, and I'm blessed to be here. Thank you all for your service, for coming to be here today. All of your presence here testifies to the strength and the power of the 12 steps. It is the 12 steps that is our program. It's not any specific food plan or the use of the tools, although those things are great, and those help us do our steps, but it is the steps that is our program. I'd like to say that the 12 steps work. They might not seem logically like they're going to work, but how logical is picking up the food and expecting that to work? We have a problem with our boss or our spouse or our child or anybody, and we go through a drive-thru and we stuff our face or we buy a box of something or another, and we expect that to solve our problems. That doesn't solve our problems either. So if you're on the fence about trying the 12 steps, I encourage you to give it a try, because you know, nobody comes in here when everything is perfect. We come in here when our pants are on fire. And that's when we give it a try. And it's the 12 steps that make it happen. When I came into this program 4 years ago, I was a complete mess, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Physically, I had severe sleep apnea. When I laid down flat, my face would go numb from lack of oxygen. I had joint problems, I had energy problems, I was starting to have digestive problems. Mentally, I was a complete mess because I had just found out my husband had an inappropriate relationship with my best friend, and I'm a very, very introverted person, so I tend to be overly dependent on two or three friends at most, and two of my main supports were then gone. Because of this event, and spiritually, I believed in a higher power. I was a religious person. Still, I'm a religious person, but I didn't believe that God would step in and care about something as simple as my food problem, like picking up what I ate or these little things. I didn't believe I could turn over. So those were the steps I had. I had to come to grips with those. But before I could take any steps, I had to do what some people call step zero. Step zero is where they talk about you have to want what we have and be willing to go to any lengths to get it. Until I was in the rooms and saw people with true serenity, I wasn't willing to work the program because I didn't want what they had yet. Losing weight wasn't enough. it was the serenity that sold me on this program, and seeing people who could get through cancer or children's deaths or spouses' deaths or becoming, seeing themselves succumb to Alzheimer's, those kinds of true traumas, and handling with serenity. Once I saw that, I saw what I wanted and came willing to get it. I did step zero and I could begin all the steps. Now, our first step says that we have to admit we're powerless over our substance and that our lives had become unmanageable. That part was easy for me. That was probably the easiest step that I did, because I could look in the mirror and I could see that I was powerless over food. I had gone through the whole list of diets and food clubs, many of which are perfectly healthy if your problem is you need to learn how to eat healthily. There's absolutely nothing wrong with some of the food clubs, but they didn't address my desire to eat compulsively, to fix every emotion. When I ate, it wasn't just because I was sad or depressed. Actually, it wasn't even the biggest things that made me eat. It was the little things that made me eat, because I always wanted to be even and balanced. And if I felt a little too happy, a little too sad, a little too angry, a little too excited, a little too obsessed with something or another, all those times I would eat, which made me overeat compulsively several times a day. So once I saw that and acknowledged, again, my personal life had totally gone to pieces, I could admit my life was unmanageable. But then I had to come to believe that there was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. I had to do step two. I had to believe that my higher power cared about what I put in my mouth, cared about whether or not I held my temper with my children or my spouse. I had to do what they talk about in the big book. I had to sit down and write a want ad for my higher power. What would I want my higher power to be? And then I had to act as if. And once I did that, once I put pen to paper, a whole world opened up to me. And that's when I found the higher power that I have now. I haven't changed my religion or my religious observance. All of those have been strengthened. But I do have a personal higher power that cares about every little thing that I think or do, and not in a judgmental way, but in a loving and supportive way. So I strongly encourage following the big book and doing that step. Then I had to make the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. God can see around the corners in my life. I cannot see around the corners. And from my vantage point, when I began program of I had my marriage again was on the rocks. I had just lost my best friend. All of these things. I had to put everything into God's hands because I could not see how this could all turn out to be a blessing. I've always believed everything happens for a reason, and God doesn't test me. He doesn't do anything bad to test me and see how my faith is. If something bad has to happen, I'm going to grow out of it. Something good is going to come out of it. And I had to believe that, and I put that into action every day. I'm a teacher, and I recently had to fill out the form for what I wanted to teach next year. There are a lot of changes going on in the educational system right now. I don't even know what positions are going to be available for next year. I don't know if there's part-time positions open, full-time positions open. I know nothing. I don't even know what's best for me, because only higher power knows whether I should be working part-time or full-time, because it affects how many meetings I can go to and my program. So I actually had the strength this year to write down, however you want to use me, to the principal, you use me, and leave it to higher power. And I only came to that after years of working this program. When we came to number four, I've done several step fours. I strongly advocate using the OA workbook. I think the questions in it are fabulous. I combined it with doing the big book style fourth step. As our previous speaker mentioned, it's three inventories, and we do an inventory on our resentments, all our fears, and our sexual inventory. We write down how it affects things. Which of our primary instincts does it affect? Our social instinct, our security instinct, our sexual instinct. What kind of patterns do we see? And I didn't have to come up with every bad thing I'd ever done in my life to see the patterns very quickly. I learned where my fears were and where I had to put my action in from doing those inventories. I strongly recommend doing it big book style. Admitting it to God, this is where to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This is where the OA workbook really shines. The questions in the OA workbook are very, very good, in my opinion, for fleshing out, are we really ready to give up these insecurities, these fears that we have? I went to a workshop where we wrote about how did each of these defects of character help us? How were we using these defects of character? How could we use the program and our higher power instead of these defects of character? When I did that writing at that workshop, I learned how dishonesty and fear had served me in the past, and I learned how my higher power could take over. So that's an activity that you can do. When I was finally ready to have God remove all these defects of character, I had to do it after I had thoroughly done a step five. And I want to step back for a minute and say there is a reason that all the steps are in the order they are, and we're not supposed to jump around. We need the love and support and the strength that we get from steps two and three with our higher power in order to be able to honestly look at ourselves in the fourth step and admit these things to ourselves and to other people in the fifth step and become ready to have God remove them in the sixth step. We need to feel that love. Otherwise, I know I've gone into a place where I've done way too much step four and daily step tens and not enough step two and three and 11, which means I haven't connected to my higher power. And I've just come up with, I'm a worthless human being, change everything about me. And that's not productive. This program is not about shame and it's not about blame. This program is about objectively seeing in black and white what are our defects. How can we correct our defects? How can we make amends for our defects? And moving on. When I made a list of all persons we had harmed, I discovered that I had really harmed my husband and my best friend about how I handled their relationship. And I needed to make amends to them. Now, I had a lot of people I needed to make amends to. I had a terrible relationship with my stepmother. I made amends to her. I made amends to my brother and my siblings and all these people. But the tough one was the amends to the previous best friend, because when I had found out about their relationship, I had told people about it. I had called and left messages on her machine and text and messaged her nasty things. And I had really become not the person that I want to be at the time. And I needed to make a classic big books amends, which meant that I didn't make amends by using the word you. I made amends of, I'm sorry for what I have done. You didn't deserve these things. I wish you nothing but the best. And basically that's all I said. Actually, I ended up writing it to her because I knew it would be too uncomfortable to have it face to face. And she sent me back later a letter saying that she wished me nothing but the best also. And just the other day, higher power put us in a situation where we could have a nice long conversation, and I'm happy to say she's one of my friends again. And it's only through higher power's efforts and my growth in program and learning and saying the resentment prayer all the time. And you say, change, bless them, change me, through gritted teeth if you need to, but you say it until it you believe it. And it didn't take that long. It took about 3 weeks, as they talk about in the big book, for that to happen. All right, so I'd made all my big amends. I'd even made amends to a college professor that I was a big mouth in his classroom. I'd really made everything I could think of. And I'd become kind of a ninth-step junkie. I enjoy saying, I'm sorry, because I get a God shot out of that, like an injection of the feeling of God, that kind of God shot. I get a God shot out of making a ninth-step amends, because I feel so close to my power, higher power when I do it. It feels really good. I do the tenth step every day. I take that personal inventory, again, big book style. I go through where was I selfish, resentful, fearful, and I look at, did that affect anybody? How could I make, what did I do today that I'm proud of? What could I have done better? It's important that I say in that 10th step in a positive way. I usually do some prayer and meditation, step 11, a little before I do step 10, because I need to feel that loving contact with my higher power before I look at my day. Because otherwise I won't look at my day honestly. And then the prayer and meditation, I'm a big believer in learning all sorts of different types of meditation, from yoga breathing to guided meditations, all sorts of new agey stuff and all sorts of classic prayers and psalms. I believe in all of them for different times and different places. I frequently pray in the car on my way to work if I haven't done my daily prayers. I always do step one, and I say the step three and the step seven prayers right out of the big book, and I think they're amazing. When something upsets me, I say the acceptance prayer. The big book is full of so much wisdom, and the wisdom in the steps, it tells us everything we need to know. And lastly, for number 12, I try and work service just the best that I can. I have an OA Twitter feed that I have OA messages on, and I get OA messages on. I have a blog on the internet. I try and do service. I sponsor sometimes. I try and do what I can to do service. And I let my higher power guide me. Our intuition is our connection to our higher power. And by praying and meditating daily, as soon as I start feeling disequilibrium, I pray. And as soon as that calmness comes back, I get the intuition that I need. So the big book has the path to recovery. And now I'd like to introduce Barbara J. She's going to finish up our discussion.
Hi, I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater and food addict. Can you hear me in the back?
Hi, Barbara.
Okay. I've been in program since June of 95, and I always say when I qualify that I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict and relapse survivor and exercise bulimic and basically just a compulsive person all around. As we've heard this morning, everyone else sharing, that's true. That just happens to be true for me, too. I came into program, as I said, in June of 95. I had had an experience with program prior to 95 where I looked up OA. I became familiar with it through the Dear Abby column. And I thought, well, I'll check it out because I've tried every other diet and nothing seems to work. I go up the escalator and down the escalator time and time again. So in 1991, I went to an OA meeting, and my first experience wasn't a positive experience. I walked into the room and was not greeted as a newcomer. And I sat down and listened to the sharing, and one of the people that was sharing was crying throughout her sharing, and I thought that my first impression was that of it was a sect or something. So I immediately walked out of the room and did not come into contact with OA again until 95, when my therapist told me that I needed to do something about my weight because my self-image was attached to how I looked, my personality and how I looked. So I went to OA again, and this time I had a very positive experience. I was greeted when I came into the meeting, and fortunately for me, it was a big book meeting. So I got my first exposure to the big book, and everyone was very welcoming, and I got my first sponsor there as well. She was very helpful in helping orient me to not only the program, but what OA was about, but also the 12 steps. And we started working them right away. The first step was the easiest one for me to take at the time because, as I say, I was constantly dieting. And the second step came to believe in a power greater than myself. That was a little difficult for me at first because my idea of a loving God was, well, he wasn't very loving. He was a punishing God, and that was my perception. So it took me a while to develop a concept of a loving God. And once I did that, we went into the third step where I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And developing a loving God helped me to turn my will over at the time. I stayed in program for 2 years. I had very good abstinence, and I always say I'm an exercise bulimic because part of my abstinence was exercise, only I carried it to the extreme. I would exercise at the gym. I would walk for 2 hours, and this was every day. And my weight, my physical recovery was great. I lost 60 pounds right away. And then I sat down with a nutritionist who helped guide me through a food plan. And fortunately for me, this nutritionist was 12-step oriented. So that made a big difference and helped guide me on what foods I should avoid. And for me, it just happened to be flour and sugar. And I, as was shared by Marita, I did not judge others by my food plan. In fact, now I sponsor people who don't follow my same food plan. And in fact, my current sponsor is not sugar and flour free. But she's a great sponsor and provides great guidance. I stayed in the program for 2 years, and then my ego got in the way because I was thin. I thought I looked great. I had only worked up through step 4, and I just thought I knew it all and I didn't need program anymore. So it was in December of 97 that I went back into the sugar. I was at my sister's house, and family of origin is always pushing my buttons. And I spent Christmas with my sister and my mother and my brother. And I found myself eating chocolate. Excuse me for mentioning a food. I found myself eating from the time I got there until I left. And every piece of that item that was in my sister's house went into me. And I'm surprised that she did not say anything. She just let me eat away. And I was back into the food again full time. It took me another 5 years to get back into program. I came to meetings sporadically. And I tried to do the program without sponsors. It wasn't until 2006 that I came back into program and was willing to work the steps. And I got a sponsor who nudged me back into the rooms. He was the only male sponsor that I ever had. And I got a call from him. He happened to be a friend that I kept in contact with all those years that I was in relapse. And I laughingly said to him when he said that I needed to start going to meetings again, well, does that mean, I said, well, does that mean you're going to be my sponsor? And he said, sure. So I started with him and got back into the steps. And the current sponsor that I have now, I did decide that I needed to work with a female sponsor as I was getting back into the fourth step again. And she helped me with one of her requirements was that I had to write every day. And for me, that tool is very valuable. It helps me with my 10th step inventory daily. I found through working the fourth step and fifth step recently that it helped draw the poison out of my system and helped keep me away from the food. I had worked the fourth step before trying to do it without a sponsor and found out that it just wasn't working that way for me. One of the things that I did back in 2006 was to start work on my ex-husband. And it was a very valuable experience because he died in 2006. And at first I thought, oh, yay, I don't have to do this now because he's not here anymore. Wrong. Because I still had the issues that I needed to deal with. So she took me through that step. And I found myself feeling so much better once I gave it away to her. And I was also able to make amends to my ex-husband because I had to look at my side of the street. And as a result, I realized there were a lot of things that I could have done better while we were married and afterwards when we tried to maintain a friendship. Then I worked on one of my coworkers at the same time, and I'm still waiting to make an amends to him. He hasn't come back into my life yet, but it was worthwhile to do the fourth step on him and get some more of that poison out. And currently I'm doing a fourth step on my father, and it's helping me see how much I had to do in my relationship with my father that colored my judgment in working with him. And the sixth step was a very hard one for me the first time I worked it, because I did not want to give up my shortcomings. I looked at them, but I didn't want to give them up. And asked God to in the seventh step to remove my defects of character. I did not want to do that. And at first I didn't see that that's what it was really all about. A sponsor that had been in, because I'm in AA as well, a sponsor who was AA oriented helped me work through the sixth and seventh steps and helped me proceed on to the eighth step and making my list of amends. The first amends that I had to make was an interesting experience. The first person that I had to make an amends to turned out to be someone who wasn't a very stable person. And the sponsor that I had at the time helped me realize that and also helped me through that first ninth step. The tenth step, as I say, I take daily and I journal. And so much comes out of journaling. It's a very useful step for me, a very useful tool. I always see how my day has gone, what good things have I done, how have I helped others, and also what have I done that I could have done better. The 11th step, I always forgot the second half of the 11th step, asking for his the will to care, asking God, what did he want of me, and having the will to carry that out. And that was pointed out to me by my therapist that I kept forgetting the second half of the 11th step. So I still have to work on that a lot, and asking God for his guidance and turning my will over to him. These days, I do a lot of service in OA. I go to intergroup and do service there. And I work with sponsees. And I'm very glad to have been in this program these 15, 16 years, because God has done for me what I could not do for myself in staying away from the food and having a sane and healthy lifestyle, because my life really was unmanageable before I came into program. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, everybody, for letting us share with you today. Thank you for your service and being here. I think we're done now?